Hi, and welcome to an Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we've got a dynamic hour for you. And keep that pad of paper and pen handy, because you are going to want to write down some of the information that we share with you this afternoon. And we are just going to be, I think, regaling you with absolutely wonderful stories about animals and how you can communicate with them. My guest this afternoon is Mary Getton. She's in the Pacific Northwest. We're going to be talking about her very unique book, Communicating with Orcas, The Whale's Perspective. Mary, welcome to the show, and where are you located in the Pacific Northwest?
Hi, Donna. Thanks so much. I'm speaking to you from Orcas Island.
Orcas Island. Now, is that purposefully an area you chose to live in because orcas are your passion?
That's it, exactly. It was the whales that brought me here.
Oh, my goodness. Now, I want my audience to know a little bit about you, Mary. You're a telepathic animal communicator, and you've been involved with this line of work for a number of years, but since 1996, you've worked with clients throughout the world to help them understand their animals better. And you have had workshops on how to communicate with animals, reconnecting with nature, etc. But the whales really have had a profound influence on your life. And it was so intriguing to be able to read your book, Communicating with Orcas, and be able to know that all of the events that you mention in this book are true, number one, and you have such a tremendous attitude about animals, their intelligence. What was it that started you on this journey? Did it go back to when you were a kid? Did you bump into a whale at SeaWorld? What happened?
Right. Well, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to go work with Jane Goodall. That was my dream, was to be a researcher out in the jungle. And you know how life goes. I never got there. But in the late 80s, I started volunteering at a hospital for seals and sea lions in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
called the Marine Mammal Center. And during that time, I just fell in love with the marine mammals. And I was also I was lucky enough to work with some stranded dolphins and porpoises, small whales. And it was at that time I also found out about telepathic animal communication. So I met Penelope Smith, who was one of the pioneers in this field, and started taking classes from her so that I could learn how to talk to our patients at the hospital. This was really how I got interested in this whole field. And as I got deeper into marine mammals, I really wanted to work with whales. And so I went out to find a place where I could do that. And this was the Pacific Northwest was the place.
I would like for you to share with my listeners a little bit about how you learned to communicate telepathically with animals. Telepathy has been researched for so many years by the scientific community, and it's pretty much accepted. It's been known in cultures throughout the world. Communicating with animals is the stuff of many legends, of many cultures. It's very significant in understanding many different peoples and why they've done what they've done. But you went to these classes. What were some of the disciplines that you had to learn so that you could make this a part of your life that obviously is very much a passion of yours and very significant, and it's affecting the lives of thousands of animals as well as people?
Right.
What are these disciplines?
You know, telepathy is, it's not a special gift. It's an ability that we're all born with. All animals communicate with each other telepathically. We're animals too, so we're hardwired. We have that equipment. But we've been socialized out of it, basically, in our Western culture. So to get that back really isn't that difficult. It's a process of learning how to get quiet and to shift from a space of doing to allowing. Because animal communication or telepathic communication isn't something you really do. It's allowing the information to flow in. And so when I'm teaching classes, We spend a lot of time getting quiet, trying to slow down your mind, and just opening up to allow the information to flow in. And that really is all there is to do. It's setting your intention to who you want to speak to, and then just starting the conversation. I know it sounds so simplistic, but it really is simple. It just takes a lot of practice.
Now, when you started your practicing, I know one of the questions that people will ask me, and I will pose it to you. How do you know the difference between your imagination and the information you're actually receiving?
Right. Yeah, that is a good question, and it's one of those self-doubt things that people have the hardest time overcoming. So in the beginning, when you start doing this kind of work, what you need to do is ask a lot of easily validated or verifiable questions. So if you're working with, say, a friend of yours in another state, you know, you can have them send you a picture of their animal with specific questions like, you know, what does my bed look like? What kind of food do I eat? You know, what does my house look like? Things like that, so that when you talk to animals, you can see that, okay, yeah, I did. I got this exactly right. He sleeps in a little brown furry bed that's round, and it's a matter of building up sort of a track record, really, of accurate information. So it's important to start out by asking those questions that you can get instant validation on, not a question like, you know, who's your best friend?
Now, with this, here you are, and this is your book, Communicating with Orcas, The Whale's Perspective. You had met a gentleman by the name of Peter Fromm, and he had written a book called Whale Tales. And you and Peter had known each other for years, and he talked to you about a very special relationship that you could develop with Granny. Tell us who Granny is.
Granny is she's a matriarch. She's the leader of J-POD, which is one of our local groups of whales here in the Pacific Northwest. And Granny is a whale that scientists think was born around 1911. So she's 95 this year.
95? Who knew that whales could live that long?
Yeah, it's really amazing. You know, we think the average lifespan for a female orca is about 60. And so that makes Granny quite special. She has another friend who is the leader of K-POD that we think is about the same age as her. So they are the oldest females around. And that's why when I set out to find out about these whales and do my own research project, I wanted to speak to one of these wise old females that really know the whole story behind them.
Now, when were you first introduced to Granny? Because your whole book has Granny as a specific thread of theme throughout it.
Right.
How did you meet Granny?
I first met Granny, I think, was in 1991. When I was working, I was doing some research for the Whale Museum out at the lighthouse at Limekiln Park on the west side of San Juan Island. And I was out there doing some data entry early in the morning, and I was there by myself, and it was kind of one of those misty, foggy days. And I just suddenly, you know, turned around and looked out the window, and there were whales going by. So I ran out to the rocks. And I was standing there just watching them and peering at them in the mist. And this whale came straight up out of the water and just hung there looking at me. And she went back down. And when she came up again, I got a really good look at her dorsal fin and her saddle patch, which is how we identify whales. And I ran into the lighthouse and got the ID book out. And I was able to figure out that it was this whale called Granny. And that was the start of it. But then that summer, I also started leading whale watch trips here, which I did for 10 years. And so when I was out on the water, I would always look for her and her family, and I would yell out the window, "Hey, Granny!" So before I actually started having telepathic conversations with her, I had spent like 3-4 years out on the water observing her and her family.
Now, you say that whales are a matrilineal society. Explain what that is.
Well, the local orcas are. Not every whale family is the same. So it's in the local orca population here, the pod is run by the oldest female, and the children all stay with their mothers for life. So even an adult male doesn't travel off and find a mate and start a family. All the children stay with their moms. So one of the other whales that I interviewed a lot for the book was Ruffles, and he's Granny's son.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also very old by whale standards. He's a male, and he's about 54. And the average lifespan right now that we say for males in this area is about 30. So they've got some really good genes going.
We have had such a history with the whaling industry. It was quite large. Many, many thousands of them were destroyed. Orcas are phenomenal animals. They are so exquisitely beautiful, and there's been so much misinformation through the years that's been compiled because they really haven't had the technology nor the understanding of how to really research them. With what you have done, how did your attitudes relative to these animals change?
Yeah, you know, the whales, I find them to be so mysterious in a lot of ways. For the most part, they were much more loving and peaceful than I would have expected. And yet, at other times, they do show that other side of themselves where, for instance, the resident whales here are basically fish eaters. So they aren't the typical killer whale types that we think of that are out there eating other whales and porpoises and seals and sea lions. But when that other type of whale that we call a transient comes into this area, Granny's family and those peaceful fish-eating whales sometimes can get into altercations with them and really try to actually beat them up and make them go away.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
They have their paradigms just as we, as humans, and we are part of the animal family, have our paradigms too.
Exactly.
It's absolutely wonderful. Now, Raffaella Pope
was
a woman that you ended up working with. Tell us a little bit about Raffaella and her talents and why the two of you decided to join together to do your own kind of research regarding telepathy and communicating with whales.
Right. Well, Raffaella is also a telepathic animal communicator, and I met her at an interspecies counselor course at Penelope Smith's house back in, I think it was early 1996. And, you know, we just hit it off. We were good friends. And about 6 months later, she came up here to the islands and went out to see the whales with me. And I had been communicating with the whales for a while, but I didn't have anybody I could get to verify some of the information I was getting. For instance, one of the things the whales had told me was that sometimes they do eat harbor seals.
Mm-hmm.
And all the scientific research said, no, they just eat salmon and other fish. So when Raffaella came up, I realized this was an opportunity for me to get some validation, just like I was talking about with people starting out communicating. So I made her a list of questions, and when we were out on the water, she connected and talked to Granny. And afterwards, we were talking about, gosh, it would be great if we could really, you know, get to know these whales. I had such a desire to do that type of research, but I knew that because I was a naturalist, people would sort of suspect that whatever answers I got were already preconceived ideas of my own. So that's when I approached Raffaella to see if she would like to work with me because she knew absolutely nothing about whales. And during our time together of doing these interviews, she consistently just blew my mind when she would come up with some of these visuals of parts of a whale's body that I knew she could know nothing about, or One time she described to me a greeting ceremony, which is a really special event that, you know, really doesn't happen that often here, and I knew she had never heard of it or seen it. So it was just really fun for me to work with somebody else where we could get feedback and we could both at times ask the whales separately questions just to make sure we were getting correct information.
I was surprised that in your research you came up with the information that orcas are technically dolphins, not whales.
Well, that's a scientific fact. A lot of what we call the smaller whales are actually in the dolphin family. And whale is really just a term for any cetacean that is more than about 12 feet in length.
Mm-hmm.
So pilot whales are actually in the dolphin family. There's a lot of them.
It's just amazing because we have, dependent on what level of education you've gotten, a whale is a whale.
Mm-hmm.
You would not in a million years ever associate an orca with a dolphin.
Right.
It just isn't something that you would even give a consideration to for the average person anyway, and yet they are dolphins. Now, they also, all of the toothed whales use echolocation.
Yes.
And this is something that has been found in them, but what other animals also have this unique skill?
The bats use echolocation. Actually, it's only, I think, the bats that do use it other than the whales. Although, you know, we did some studies with we're starting to find it more with some other marine mammals like sea lions, just on a very small scale, not with the intense sort of X-ray type vision pictures that
mm-hmm.
whales get back. But they are finding that, you know, animals that are in those dark environments deep in the ocean do use some sort of echo ability to understand what's out there in front of them.
And I want to share with my listeners some of the facts that you give regarding echolocution. It's that with each sound, a whale must remember the frequency, analyze the sound, and compare it to the memory of other sounds, searching for the subtle differences. And that this information allows the animal to create a mental or sound picture from the echoes it receives, and their analysis is so highly developed that they're able to discriminate between almost identical objects.
Yeah.
Now, that's incredible capacity and the intelligence and the processing capabilities they have to do this are very sophisticated.
Oh, yeah. I think the dolphin brain, I think, is way more sophisticated than the human brain, actually.
Now, Granny is about 22 feet long, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she has a svelte figure of about 4 tons.
Yep.
And calves of orcas are 7 to 8 feet in length, and they weigh 400 to 500 pounds at birth.
That's right.
It's amazing. Now, you talk about the doll porpoises
mm-hmm.
in here. Tell us a little bit about them.
Oh, they're great. They're a beautiful little black and white creature. Porpoises are similar to dolphins, but they actually have some basic anatomical differences, so they are not in the dolphin family. The porpoise family is separate. But they're about 8 feet long, 6 to 8 feet, and they're black and white. And we have quite a few of them up here in the San Juans. And actually, all the way down through Puget Sound, you can see doll's porpoise. They have a little triangular-shaped fin, and often people mistake them for baby orcas. So they'll tell me, oh, my boat was attacked by a pod of baby orcas. And I say, no, those were porpoises. You would never see baby orcas running around together. They would always be with their family.
Now, it was recorded as far back as Aristotle, maybe even before then, because native peoples have often talked about animals in the way that they communicate. But you state that Aristotle and Pliny the Elder first wrote about the clicks and squeals of dolphins nearly 2,000 years ago. And John Lilly
mm-hmm.
is a man that studied these animals quite extensively. His passion was so deep to try to find out how to communicate with these animals. It was the stimulus for a television show it was called SeaQuest, I think,
uh-huh.
where they had a dolphin that could communicate with people. And, you know, all kinds of things were stimulated in the 70s because of his research on many different levels, because he had gotten certain results. How does his research, how did it affect you as far as doing the work you do?
Yeah, you know, there's been so much research over the years with, like, using language boards and things like that to try and communicate with dolphins. I think, you know, once I learned how to telepathically communicate, it just seemed to me that this was really the new frontier for research. If you can just have direct communication with them, there's no need for setting up, like, an intermediary language that we could both learn how to speak. And so I really think this telepathy is the wave of the future in research.
Now, to document this, you and Rafaela kept notes.
Oh, yeah. We tape recorded every session, and then I meticulously transcribed each tape word for word, and then went back and took all the ums and things out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It
mm-hmm.
was quite a long process.
Now, you brought up something relative to the herding of fish, and this was in a communication from Granny. And I know in science and in research, they have found that the dolphins and some of the other fish, too, maybe they don't use the same kind of sound, but they actually will herd large groups of fish so that they can feed.
Yes.
It's not unlike an Australian sheepdog.
Right, right. They do some cooperative hunting where they will herd together a big group of fish, and then they will take turns going in and feeding. And they often do that up along the west side of San Juan Island. The way the currents flow in from the strait kind of pushes those fish in, and they'll use that shoreline a lot to kind of pin the fish and keep them in one area. And for that reason, actually, the local Whale Watch Association put an extra large boundary on that west side. They give the whales a quarter of a mile between the boats and the shore so that they have this good area to hunt in.
You have so much in the way of conversations between yourself and the orcas and Rafaela as well. And for those of you just listening, we're talking with Mary J. Getten. She's here on Orcas Island in the Pacific Northwest. Her book is called Communicating with Orcas, A Whale's Perspective, and she gives much of that in the book. The facts that we're covering right now, I think, are just as interesting. I mean, the book is something, once you pick it up, you start reading it, you're not going to want to put it down. I did not realize that orcas actually could sleep.
Oh, yeah.
And they do, but we didn't know until just a few years ago, and I think it was because of Jacques Cousteau, that sharks went to sleep. We always thought the fish just kept swimming, but
right.
They don't. They actually have their sleep periods.
Yeah. I think that's necessary for all the living creatures.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Tell us about the greeting ceremony with the whales.
Oh, the greeting ceremony, that is just spectacular. And I've really only got to see one really formal one in 10 years on the water, and one sort of, you know, half-baked greeting ceremony. But the greeting ceremony it's a ritual of the whales. And when we have three pods here in the Pacific Northwest, they're called J, K, and L. And they're each family groups, extended family groups. But these three groups are really a large community, and they do interbreed between the families. And so they are really closely related. And when they've been apart for quite some time, you know, sometimes a week or two, and they come back together, what happens is a greeting ceremony. And each pod will line up facing each other on the water, you know, kind of like a football team. And they just hover there. They'll just lay there, like, you know, just lined up, staring at each other. And then all of a sudden, they just charge into the middle, and it's a giant free-for-all, and they're rubbing and twisting and squeaking and squealing. And it's just craziness, and they're just having a blast together. And that goes on for, you know, 5 minutes maybe. And then they all sort of split up and take off and travel together. And it's just unbelievable when you see that kind of interaction.
There are some very significant points that you bring forward that when you were communicating with Granny, she was very clear about. And she said there is a major effect that is disturbing them, and that is overfishing. And we all know that with the density of the population on our planet today, more than it's been perhaps in a few million years, there is a tremendous amount of fishing that's being done by nations all over the world. And overfishing is something that's very significant, and also pollution. And
yeah.
Granny said that some of the species will disappear because of one or both of these situations.
Right. I think, you know, there's pollution is huge. We've lost a lot of whales up here, and it's not often that we can actually get a body to study after they die, because usually they die way out at sea somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the whales that we have recovered were highly toxic. In fact, some of the most toxic marine mammals in the world. So that's really affecting their reproductive systems and their immune systems. In this area, I would say overfishing, at least of the salmon, that stopped, because they've really cut back on the fishing.
Mm-hmm.
But we're losing a lot of fish here to logging, actually. When they log up the rivers, silt comes down and covers up those salmon eggs in the riverbeds and smothers them. So we're not getting the regeneration of the fish that we could be getting. Even the raising of the temperature in the seas is causing them problems, because with each rise in the temperature, certain species disappear. They can't live in that type of water temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just affects everybody down the line. So we are seeing some really severe problems with the entire ocean ecosystem.
My guest today has been Mary J. Getten. Her wonderful book, Communicating with Orcas, she talks about Namu, she talks about so many creatures that we've heard about in the various facilities that have had orcas and have had dolphins and other creatures of the sea in their care. It's a marvelous book. It will give you an insight into a world that you may or may not ever have a chance to really be close to. But this is a book that will bring as close to you as you possibly maybe will be ever able to experience the insights into this wonderful, wonderful animal. Communicating with Orcas, Mary J. Getten, The Whale's Perspective. Mary, I know we're almost out of time here for our interview. What would you like to leave as a message with my listeners before we close?
You know, Donna, I think that the message I would like to give is that we have to heal our disconnection from nature. I think it's the human separateness from nature that's causing all of these declines in the natural environment. And one of the best ways that you can heal that is by just being close to animals, getting out there, spending time with them, and just seeing them for who they really are and respecting them in their natural environment.
Mary J. Getten, Communicating with Orcas. Mary, it's been a pleasure having you as a guest. Enjoy the magnificent day I know you're experiencing on Orcas Island, and I hope that you have many, many satisfying years of success with these beautiful animals that you love so much.
Thank you, Donna, and be sure to get up here and see Granny while she's still around.
I would love to do that.
Okay.
Have a magnificent day.
Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. You'll be able to call in during the latter part of the show, if you so desire, at 877-876-5227. We've got more good things to share with you, so don't go away. We're going to be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Sebo. I think we're having some technical problems here, so we're just going to move right along. Now, I want to remind you, don't forget, we are coming up on the Washington State Renaissance Fantasy Fair out in Gig Harbor. This is an event that I'm just so delighted to be a part of. It is an event that enables me as a person to have the opportunity to step back in time and to, in my environment there, be able to interact with those of you that come out. And if you've not been, well, this is the last weekend coming up, the 19th and 20th of August, so we're going to be out there regaling you with all of the magnificent activities that we have available in this 19th century environment. After you walk through those magnificent castle entrances, you will enter into this time zone that will fascinate you, delight you, and you'll be talking about it forever. This is an event that's put on once a year, and if you would like to find out more about it, go to WashingtonRenFair.com. That's Washington, RENFAIRE.com, and you'll be able to get your tickets in advance. You will be able to save money at the same time, and you know what? Tell your friends about it. Make it a full day. Go out and have an absolutely magnificent time, and you can dress up if you want to come out in costume, or we even have costumes available there for you. You'll be able to see knights in shining armor. Yes, they are real, and you will even be able to talk to them. And the kids will have a fabulous time. They're going to see all kinds of games and plays. There's 8 stages where performances are going on at all times during the day. And the program opens up, the fair opens up at 10 in the morning. People start lining up before 9 a.m. So if you want to save money, you want to not to have to wait in the long lines, we have tens of thousands of people that come out, and this is the last weekend, then go to their wonderful website, Washington Ren Fair. Don't forget the E on the end of fair. And there you'll be able to get all of your tickets right online. Get those tickets and you'll be able to walk right through with your family and friends and not have to wait a moment to have a fabulous time. So be sure you come on out. And again, it's this coming Saturday and Sunday, and we will be there with our attire on and ready to, again, regale you with wonderful stories, fables, music, and even delicious foods to snack on as you're walking around and looking at all of the wonderful things that are going on. So do it. WashingtonRenFair.com. Go there and get everything before you come on out. It'll save you time and money. Hi, this is Donna. There was just a slight interruption there. Now, by the way, if you would like to call in and chat with me, 877-876-5227 is the telephone number to call in to. Also, I wanted to be sure to let you know that you're not going to be hearing the Donna Sebo Show on Thursday, Friday, and Monday. BBS Radio is not having any live talk show programming excepting for one particular hour on Saturday. So if you tune in and you hear just music, don't be disturbed. Just know that we will be coming back on the Donna Sebo Show as of Tuesday. So again, tomorrow, Friday, and Monday, you will not be hearing my programming. So be sure you just go in to BBS Radio and you'll see all the scheduling of the shows and the interviews that I have. And those interviews that were going to be on Thursday, Friday, and on Monday, then they are being rescheduled, and you can go in and you can look at the entire itinerary to see where those people are going to be, and you don't have to miss any of the programming. So again, be sure you check the BBS Radio website to see when the shows are going to be back on the air, and it's going to be for the Donna Sebo Show, effective Thursday afternoon, 3 to 4 Pacific time. So we know we don't want to have you miss any of this. And if you want to call in and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insights, you can do that right now at 877-876-5227. And while I'm thinking of it, next Tuesday, my guest is going to be Madonna Siles. We're going to be talking about how the brain heals itself. Also, we're going to be talking next Wednesday with Kay Faltz about her wonderful dog, Lauren, and we'll be taking a visit to Paris to find out about the story. And we're going to be talking about Hostage at the Table. This sounds like a bit of an awesome title, and it is an awesome book. George Kohlreiser is going to be my guest. We'll be talking with him in Switzerland, and he is a man that travels all over the world dealing with security, but more than that, he takes a different approach. It's how can we not be hostages to our own fears. It's fascinating information, beautifully written book, and I know you'll enjoy him. And then we're going to be talking to E. Laszlo about his unique book, The Chaos Point. Mr. Laszlo is dedicated to peace. He and a number of other people, including the Dalai Lama, have formed an organization that's dedicated to peace and to a healthy economy globally, and we'll be talking with him in Tuscany, Italy. Nutrition is going to be coming up in our subject matter, natural pest control. We're going to be talking about Marilyn Monroe, and then also Carol Edmondson, our doodle lady. So we've got a wonderful lineup of guests, and I don't want you to miss out on any of it. And remember, you can go into my website, DelphiInternational.com, D-E-L-P-H-I, international.com, or you can go to bbsradio.com, look up the Donna Sebo Show, and then you'll be able to go in and see what our schedule is for programming. So if you've missed anything, know that the archives are there, some of them, and more are going to be coming up, so you can listen to those at your leisure at bbsradio.com. And be sure and tell your friends about it, too, because we'd love to let them know about it so that they can share some of the good things with us. I wanted to also say that there was a cute story that somebody said. It said, obviously not everybody works for a salary at the Budapest Zoo. The statement is, please do not feed the animals. If you have any suitable food, give it to the guards on duty. Oh, those guards must have had some real interesting stuff that they ate. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. My telephone number here, toll-free, is 877-876-5227. Give them a buzz, and I'll be happy to give you my intuitive insights. If you have children, sometimes you want to do something that's a little bit unique, and you don't have a big budget, and you go, wow, what could I do? Well, how about letting them camp out in the yard? Now, my husband and I were out walking, and we were just so surprised when we saw, of course, with the warmer weather here, we were not surprised in a way, but we were surprised when we were seeing tents set up in a front yard. And this family decided it was going to do that because there were a bunch of kids that were coming over, and they were going to let them do that. So they actually had tents in both the front and the backyard. But the kids just have an absolutely wonderful time. And it's a great idea. Sometimes you don't have time to go on a long camping trip. So you can do this, and they'll have a great time. Now, here are some suggestions by a Tracy McNamara that's found that it's just worked wonderfully with the kids that she's known. What you can do is make it a little bit special for the kids. You can create nature wreaths. And she said, whenever we go on trips, we always want souvenirs, right? Well, give the kids a project. Have them cut out the center of a paper plate and then glue on nature items they find in the yard, like leaves, flowers, stones. And don't forget, she said, to have them sign and date the back of the plate. You'll be amazed at what they can find. And then also, campfire, well, that is absolutely something that every kid just thoroughly enjoys. And I can remember Girl Scout days and how much fun it was sitting around the campfire and telling spooky stories. Well, you may not be able to have a fire if you're in an area, but you can make a fake one, and you can use paper towel tubes, yellow, red, and orange tissue paper, crumpling it up to make a flame, and then you put carpet squares, rocks, and logs around, and it just creates a pseudo fire, and you can have the kids tell the scariest stories that they know. And Tracy suggests, those of you that are going to do this, brush up on some of your specialty guest stories before you do this, if you can. Find out about some real hairy, scary ones, and then just have a blast. The kids absolutely love it, and you'll have just as much fun as they do. Also, run sleeping bag races. How many kids can fit into one sleeping bag, or who can run the fastest around an easy obstacle course and finish still in the bag? That is just absolutely phenomenal. Kids love to do things like that. And she gives a tip of saying pillows, balls, chairs, and cardboard boxes make great safe obstacles that you can put around the yard for the kids to go about. And then you can pitch a tent without a hassle. And outdoors, you can drape a plastic tarp over a clothesline and secure it at the corners with garden stakes. And indoors, yes, sometimes there's camping inside, you can drape a blanket over a circle of chairs. And either way, all you have to do is put a sheet on the floor or roll out sleeping bags, and the kids will be just fine. They also love to have flashlights that they can have with them so that they can feeling like you're really out in the wild. And she gives a recipe, Tracy does here, of a trail mix that she feels that just about anybody will enjoy. She said, take a half a package of granola cereal, a half a bag of chocolate chips, and one box of raisins, a half a pound of peanuts, and a half a pound of banana chips. And, of course, you can mix and match any of these as you want, maybe adding some cranberries or some other specialty things that you may want to put in. And it's just fun. It's good munchies, and the kids will like it, and it's just, even if they leave some out in the yard, the birds will get it, and you don't have to worry about any problems. But those are some tips from Tracy McNamara for taking your kids camping so that they can do it. And, again, if your schedule's tight, it can be a lot of fun. And I think you'll have some memorable conversations when you hear some of their stories. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 877-876-5227 is the number to call in to toll-free if you would like for me to light up your life with a little bit of insight. What's your personal happiness color? Well, let me share with you some information that Catherine Morrow discovered. She said, I got this information from the Color Answer book. If you like sunny shades like yellow, orange, or lime green, you probably are a real perky and energetic soul. You're always on the go, and you like to get a jump on whatever you have to do early in the day. And you also like comfortable clothes. You want to be able to move quickly and easily, so no fancy-dancy stuff for you. And that's why whenever you need a mood boost, because you're like anybody else, you might feel sort of down in the dumps every once in a while. It's the best thing for you to do is to surround yourself in your environment with real cheerful shades like these so that it will naturally restore your particularly sunny disposition. Now, if you like pastel, peach, lavender, baby blue, pink, soft green, well, you are very warm. You know, people like you because you are warm and because you have a certain charm. You are very thoughtful, you contemplate frequently, and a little bit cautious. You enjoy culture and solitude. And when the world begins to weigh you down, you always feel better when you have these pastel tones around you because they restore your inner calm and remind you of all that's soft, good, and wonderful. If you like jewel colors like true red, blue, or green, hey, you're one of these smart and sensible people, and you have a very good, solid moral center. You also have a passion to make the world a better place. With this kind of drive, determination, and intensity, your personality is most at home with vibrant hues around you. And deep colors, rich colors, represent balance and stability, the very forces that make you feel smoothed and secured. It soothes you tremendously when you have that kind of vibrancy around you because that's who you are. Well, this is Donna Siebel. We're going to be taking a break for a moment. When we come back, if you'd like to call in and chat with me, give me a buzz at 877-876-5227. We'll be back in just a moment. Hi, this is Donna Siebel. I do want to encourage you to come on out to the Washington State Renaissance Fair. Now, I'm appearing there. And it's so much fun to meet with those of you that come out. And if you would like to be a part of 16th century time frame, this is a must-see. And you know what is so neat about it? It is just pure fun. And you have all of these whimsical characters that are walking around. You have a gnome that has this unusual hammer, and he makes all of these strange sounds, and the kids just absolutely love him. He's a short guy, and he just does all kinds of things. You have the knights that are jousting, carrying down the list, charging away, carrying armored horses, and they are just absolutely jousting for king, queen, county, or the hand of a fair maiden. And you know what? You get to see that fair maiden. You're going to see a lot of fair maidens. You're going to see all kinds of characters, magicians. You're going to hear storytellers. You'll hear Celtic music that'll make you tap your toes against the ground, and you're just going to feel so good by the time you finish the day. I think one of the greatest joys that I have in participating in this, and this is my fifth year, is the fact that people are smiling from the time they come in until they leave. In fact, people come in from all over the country. So I'd like to invite you to go to WashingtonRenFair.com, and there you can purchase your tickets in advance, Saving dollars, saving time. You won't have to stand in those long, long lines to be able to get into this final weekend of the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair. This is held out at the Mentor Creek Ranch in Gig Harbor. Again, go to their website, Washington Ren Fair. Don't forget the E at the end of the word fair, and you'll have all of the details and all information that you could possibly want. It's a final weekend of family entertainment on 8 stages, 8 hours a day, plus wonderful food, plus interaction with fabulous people. It is a delight and a joy that you'll be sharing with your friends and talking about for months to come. So we invite you to come out to the Washington Renaissance Fantasy Fair this Saturday and Sunday. I want to also remind you that the Donna Sebo Show will not be heard Thursday, Friday, or Monday. VBS Radio, there is a project that is going on, and they are going to be playing music for all of that time, but we'll be back with you at the same time, same place on Tuesday, and my guest on Tuesday is going to be Madonna Siles. We're going to be talking about how the brain can heal itself. So if any of you have had relatives or friends that have been affected by strokes, etc., this is going to be, I think, a fascinating interview, informative as well. By the way, I do want to thank so many of you that are sending me emails, and I want to tell you how much I appreciate your stories, and I'm getting to them as quickly as I can. And Kevin sent me a message here, and he said, I know you've probably seen this before, but I think it's just a great reminder. And this is how the story reads. Recently, I overheard a mother and a daughter in their last moments together at the airport. They had announced the departure. And standing near the security gate, they hugged, and the mother said, I love you, and I wish you enough. The daughter replied, Mom, our life together has been more than enough. Your love is all I ever needed. I wish you enough, too, Mom. They kissed, and the daughter left. The mother walked over to the window where I was seated, and standing there, I could see she wanted and needed to cry. I tried not to intrude on her privacy, but she welcomed me in by asking, Did you ever say goodbye to someone knowing it would be forever? And he said, yes, I have. He then asked her, forgive me for asking, but why is this a forever goodbye? I am old, and she lives so far away. I have challenges ahead, and the reality is the next trip back will be for my funeral. When you were saying goodbye, I heard you say, I wish you enough. May I ask what that means? The woman began to smile. She said, that's a wish that's been handed down from other generations. My parents used to say it to everyone. She paused a moment and looked up as if trying to remember it in detail, and she smiled even more. She said, when we said, I wish you enough, we were wanting the other person to have a life filled with just enough good things to sustain them. Then she turned towards me, and she shared the following as if she were reciting it from memory. I wish you enough sun to keep your attitude bright. I wish you enough rain to appreciate the sun more. I wish you enough happiness to keep your spirit alive. I wish you enough pain so that the smallest joys in life appear much bigger. I wish you enough gain to satisfy your wanting. I wish you enough loss to appreciate all that you possess. I wish you enough hellos to get you through the final goodbye. She started to cry and walked away. They say it takes a minute to find a special person, an hour to appreciate them, a day to love them, but then an entire life to forget them. Said, do share this with people you will never forget, and remember the person that sent it to you. Take time to live, and to all my friends and loved ones, I wish you enough. And that was from Kevin. I don't know where Kevin is, but I do appreciate his email, and I want to thank you for sending it to me. And I think that it's always good when we can wish someone enough, when we can wish for them the best, because there are going to be those times when we will be saying goodbye to people, to situations, to conditions in life that otherwise we may not have an opportunity to say goodbye again to or with or for. So again, I think that Kevin gave us a wonderful gift when he shared that with us. Donna Sebo here, and if you want to give me a buzz, 877-876-5227 is our telephone number to call into. And don't forget, we are not going to be airing the Donna Sebo Show on Thursday, Friday, and Monday, but we will be back on with you on Tuesday. So we look forward to having you on the air with us. Did you know that your cell phone today could do so many things? I'm sure a lot of you are far more sophisticated with your cell phones than I am. I really am not too much interested in the bells and whistles, but my goodness, they are swiftly making the cell phone so that it's going to be able to do just about anything and everything, seemingly. And you can send an email from your computer to any cell phone for free. It used to be the only way the text message was, you know, the only way to text a message was through your cell phone, and there was a fee attached to it. Now, you can email a text message to a cell phone for free. And this is a website that you can utilize. It's www.telflip.com. That's TELESLIP.com. All you have to do is type the cell phone number at telflip.com into the address portion of your email and send your message as you would any email. Yeah, and it'll be converted and sent as a text message at no charge. And you don't have to sign up to even use the service. Amazing stuff, isn't it? Also, you can save important voicemail to email and share it with your family and friends for free. Now, this is another website, gotvoice.com, G-O-T-V-O-I-C-E.com, retrieves voice messages from your cell phone or home phone and sends them to you via your email as an audio file where you can store them or you can forward them. Also, you can hold a family reunion by phone. Would you believe? I mean, this is just amazing to me. All you have to do is to go to www.freeconference.com, and you can create a free conference call for 24 of your loved ones. Amazing. Just click on reservation list standard and pick a time, number, and access code that everyone will be able to dial into, and you pay only what your phone company charges for the call. Well, this is Donna Sebo. My goodness, we've run out of time. I want to thank Mary J. Getten for being my guest. And for you, I wish a most magnificent day. And don't forget, the Washington State Renaissance Fantasy Fair last weekend is this coming Saturday and Sunday. We'll be talking with you soon. Have a fabulous week and a wonderfully, wonderfully happy weekend. Bye for now. Remember always, you're the master of your fate, the captain of your soul. Bye-bye.